singing for us tonight. That says something. That's good. As I mentioned in the announcements, next Sunday we're going to start opening up a live stream service into our multipurpose area. It's going to be a masked area for those who still want to come here to Westside, have some fellowship, but in a more protected area. And I hope and I pray that everybody sees what the elders are trying to do to create meaningful worship opportunities, meaningful opportunities for fellowship for all of our family here at Westside. I can tell you this, it isn't easy. It's not easy. And the work and the effort, the prayer that they put into allowing us to be here together in person, what's been put in place for our live stream, even though we're still working out some of the kinks with that, and then what we're trying to do with the multipurpose area next Sunday and the weeks after that. It says a lot about your leadership here, and I hope you're thankful for these men and for the work that they do. Tonight, we're going to continue looking at 1 Peter, and that's a part of the letter that is very applicable to our lives here today, what we're going through, what we're facing, just life on earth. There's something in each one of us that longs for circumstances to be fair, isn't there? We just want life to be fair. Even though we've heard and spoken that phrase, life isn't fair, and we've told people that sometimes when it goes our way and sometimes when it doesn't go our way, we still wish that it were. We want the bad guys to receive their deserved punishment. We want the heroes to be rewarded accordingly. We want hard work to pay off. We want laziness to be reprimanded. Maybe that's why fairy tales are so appealing to us. Good people receive good stuff, and they live happily ever after, while bad people are soundly punished. Life works out, justice is done, and fairness reigns supreme. Unfortunately, that isn't real life. It doesn't always turn out that way. And we teach our children from an early age that life just isn't fair sometimes. And at the end of all of our lives, on our tombstones, it could be written that life is tough, because it certainly is. And oftentimes our lives are haunted by unfairness instead of justice. We are surrounded by injustice. We want deceit exposed, dishonesty revealed, and truth rewarded. But things don't always work out that way. Life is difficult. But therein lies some of life's best lessons. I want you to listen to the following description of the value of hard knocks. The author of these words was anonymous. I'm not sure who wrote this, who said this. But I think all of us could find some wisdom in these words. Contrary to what might be expected, I look back on experiences that at the time seemed especially desolating and painful with particular satisfaction. Indeed, I can say with complete truthfulness that everything I have learned in 75 years in this world, everything that has truly enhanced and enlightened my existence, has been through affliction and not through happiness. In other words, if it were to be possible to eliminate affliction from our earthly existence by means of some drug or other medical mumbo jumbo, the result would not be to make life delectable, but to make it too banal and trivial to be endurable. This, of course, is what the cross signifies. And it is the cross, more than anything else, that has called me continually to Christ. It's one thing to read words like that, to listen to them. It's another thing to actually embrace them in our own lives. I know there isn't a person here tonight. I know there isn't a person who's listening online who hasn't at some point had reason to become bitter because of the way you were treated by someone or because of some unfair affliction or experience that you went through. And that's just life. There will always be things that happen that we don't agree with. There will be things that we face, ways that we are treated that just seem unfair. How do we handle ourselves in those moments? Everyone can blame someone for something. As Christians, we know that good will one day triumph over evil. We also know without a doubt that our God is just and kind and fair. We know how the story ends, right? We know that in the end, we're going to be victorious. We know in the end, if we follow Jesus faithfully, that we have a home in heaven that's promised to us. We know all of that. But what can we do with the struggles of life in the meantime? There's this gap that we have as we live here on earth. As we try to glorify God, we try to honor God. We're looking forward to that day where we can be with God forever. I'm looking forward to that moment. But we have this gap, this time in our life, when things don't always go our way, when life is just tough. How can we keep going when life is unfair? Our response to unfairness, as with all other issues, is based on our perspective. It depends on how we view things. In this case, we have two different perspectives to choose from: the human perspective or the divine. We can look at things through the lens of our world, through the lens of humanity, or we can look at things through the eyes of our God. Which glasses are you viewing life through? If you're like me, you remember the old Viewmasters. I don't remember when I first received my first one for a birthday or for Christmas, but you had these discs, and you put that disc in, and just all of these pictures you could just flip through. Kids today, they'd be like, wow, you had it rough. You know, just go on the internet, and here it all is in HD. But when I was a kid, this was a big deal. You'd get those discs, and it could be a disc of Australia, it could be a disc of some sport, and you just flip it in there, and you could just see all of these pictures right in front of you. What Viewmaster are we viewing life through? Is it the human perspective? And we have these thoughts: since life isn't fair, I'm just going to make sure I get my share. I'm going to look out for number one. I'm only going to be concerned with myself. I'm going to spend my energy getting what I want. And I'm just not going to take it any longer. Isn't that the worldly perspective? Isn't that how a lot of people live here in this life? Our world is full of literature and counselors who will help you carry out that very agenda. The problem is, you may be getting even. Isn't that what we want? Somebody slaps us, I'm going to slap you back, except a little harder. We might be getting even, but that doesn't mean you'll get peace. You may feel better for the short term, but you won't find lasting satisfaction. Those who live their lives through this perspective, view life through the world, through humanism, are more likely to end their lives as bitter, cynical, hostile people. Tragically, I've described a lot of people, a lot of Christians, that in the end, they're cynical, they're bitter, they're not a delight to be around. There's another disc that we can put in the Viewmaster. We can take that humanism disc and throw it away, because God has given us another option, the divine perspective, to try to see things through His perspective. We find it clearly spelled out here in this letter that we've been studying. And so tonight we're going to move the secular disc to the side, and we're going to put in God's vision, His viewpoint, to see how we should handle ourselves, when you guessed it, when life just isn't fair. In 1 Peter 3:12, Peter writes, "For the eyes of the Lord are toward the righteous, and His ears attend to their prayer. But the face of the Lord is against those who do evil." Now, what you find as you read through the Bible is God trying to describe Himself in ways that we understand as humans. We know that God is spirit. We know that God is set apart from us. But what God often does in His word is He describes things in ways that we can understand. When you read about the description of heaven found in the latter part of Revelation, we read about the streets of gold. We read about all of these beautiful emeralds and diamonds and how just majestic it is. It's in a human perspective for us to see from our own eyes what it could possibly be like. But it's a spiritual place. It's a place beyond anything that we can imagine. And so what Peter does right here is he's inspired by the Spirit, is he's describing God in a physical way for us to relate to him. His eyes are toward the righteous. His ears attend to their prayer. He hears us. And his face is against those who do evil. Now, when you read this verse, even from our perspective as humans, this seems fair, doesn't it? God is on the side of the righteous. He's against those who do evil. Isn't that appealing to us? Doesn't that sound fair? Here's a principle that God gives us. Our God, our Lord, he misses nothing. He's looking out for us. He's listening to our prayers. He hears us. And he is completely aware of the evil that we are facing. Even in our world today, even here in the century that we're living in, we know that there's evil around us. And sometimes there is evil that goes unpunished. But I promise you, it doesn't go unnoticed. God, he sees everything. Don't ever think that he has missed the evil. He sees. He remembers. He may be long-suffering, and we certainly rejoice in that. Aren't you glad that God is patient? Wow. Am I ever glad that God is patient? But that doesn't mean he compromises his justice. Not only is his eye on the righteous, those who are doing right, those who are following in the footsteps of his son, he is against those who do evil. Over the course of my athletic career, I remember some of the big opponents that I faced, some of the really good teams that we went up against, those that were really good in football, those that were really good in basketball. And there were some teams I just didn't want to face. All the way up through my junior year in basketball, we would play Big Pasture. Man, they were so good. And they had this full court press, and it was so difficult to break. And I used to dread playing them because we were up against a formidable foe. Can you imagine being against God? Can you imagine being Goliath? When David comes out there, Goliath thought he was going to be the victor. Goliath thought that David was the underdog. He had no idea what he was getting into. If Goliath knew who he was fighting against, he would have been the one that was scared to go down into the valley. Because he was nothing compared to God. Can you even imagine that? God is your enemy? God will overcome evil. Good will prevail. Because in the end, sometimes you may not want to hear the end of a movie, but I'm going to give you the ending. God wins. That's the ending. And if you're on God's side, if you're on God's team, if you're a part of his body, you win. But if this is true, we still wonder, don't we? Why doesn't he do something about evil right now? Why doesn't he take care of the struggles? Why doesn't he take care of the suffering? I promise you, these Christians that Peter was writing to, that's what's going through their mind. Yeah, Peter, that sounds all good and great, but what about right now? What about the pain that I'm going through? What about the loss that I'm feeling? What about the disappointment? What about the unfairness that's just piling up on me like a pile of bricks? What about that, Peter? Why does God let it go on so long? Well, maybe it's so that a door opens up into India so that people in that country can hear the gospel. Maybe it's so that roads are made into Russia so that people there can hear the gospel. Maybe it's so that people in Nigeria can have the opportunity for somebody in Oklahoma to study the Bible with them. God's timeline is different than ours. It's infinite. He doesn't close his books at the end of the month. It may take a lifetime or longer before justice is served. But in the end, count on it. God will be just because our God is fair. And that thought, it gives us hope beyond the bitterness. Sometimes when I look at what's going on here in America, how difficult it seems to be to reach out, to do the work of the Lord, it's a struggle at times. I'm always lifted up when I see what's going on in Haiti, when I see what's going on in Africa, when I see what's going on in India, when I hear what's going on in Brazil. Sometimes we can become so isolated in our own little area of the world, 726 McGee Drive, that we forget about the rest of the world and what's happening there. And even on a more personal level, our involvement in what's happening there. If we don't focus on the good, even in the midst of this pandemic, it's so easy to become negative, to become bitter, to become cynical. If we don't find some good to focus on, we become the loser. We trade in certain victory for cynicism and bitterness. And Peter, he shows us what we can do. He reminds us who God is, that God is on the side of the righteous, that his face is against those, opposed to those who do evil. And then we come to verse 13. It's a great reminder for us. Who is there to harm you if you prove zealous for what is good? Well, maybe our minds start thinking of a lot of people. We think about the news stories that we hear, where people are murdered, raped, assaulted, where people are hateful to each other. We only have to look at the political campaigns that are going on and just see the negativity that fills this world. And we're like, look at all of these people that can harm us. Guys, if God is on our side, that's all we need to know. And if we are with God, if we're following Jesus, we have God, we have his help, we have his strength. And so what Peter does for these Christians, he's showing them how to live in an unfair, inequitable world. Because they were thinking these very things. They were looking at Rome. Rome was a dominant, oppressive government. And they felt the boot of Rome on their necks. And right here, Peter shares a general principle that we need to underscore. Now, what does he mean by this? Those who live good, honest lives will not usually suffer harm. Now think about what those Christians were thinking of that. What about us, Peter? We're trying to live good lives. We're trying to do what's right. Well, there are exceptions, of course. But as a general rule, if you live a life of purity, a life of integrity, you won't suffer as much as those who habitually participate in evil. If you pay your debts, chances are good you won't get into financial trouble. If you pay your taxes on time, you probably won't be investigated by the IRS. If you take care of your body, chances are good you will live a healthier life than those who don't. Those who do what is right are usually not in harm's way. That's usually the case. It's the exceptions to that rule that haunt us. It's when life is unfair that we become bothered. There will be times, and maybe you're going through this right now. Right now may be one of those times for you. There very well may be times when, despite your righteous life, despite your faithful walk with God, situations turn on you. And that's exactly what we see here with these Christians. If you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, it's what Peter writes next. He's talking to these Christians that if you do what is right, if you do what's good, you have God on your side. But then he writes this, even if, here comes the exception. Even if you should suffer for the sake of righteousness, you are blessed. It's not a misprint. Look it up in your Bible. Don't trust the screen. That's what Peter writes. Even if you are doing what is right, even if you're treating your friends the right way and they still turn on you, even if you're doing what you're supposed to do, you're faithful in your marriage and your spouse turns on you, even if you're a good servant at work and your boss is very harsh, even in those circumstances, even if you are a good, godly citizen and you're living in a government that's full of corruption, even in those situations, you're blessed. Now think about your life for just a moment. And I don't want you to think about the physical blessings. Just remove all of those. Take those out of your mind as best you can. Just think about what you have in Christ. Because of Jesus Christ, we're blessed. No matter what happens to us. And Peter is writing this to Christians who were losing their lives, but gaining everything. So let me get this straight, Peter. I can do everything right. I can follow God faithfully and still suffer. Yep. That's what he's writing. That doesn't seem fair, does it? How do we respond when this occurs? Well, Peter tells us to consider ourselves blessed. Be happy. How is that even possible? Well, we need to remember who we are. Anybody can accept a reward graciously. Maybe we can even take the punishment when we've done something wrong. After all, those who do the crime do the time. But how many are equipped to handle mistreatment after they've done right? I would suggest to you that only Christians are equipped to do that. The Army Rangers are equipped to do stuff that other people cannot do. They're even equipped to do stuff that the normal branches of the military cannot do. The Navy SEALs are equipped to serve our country in ways that other military personnel cannot do. They're trained to do it. They're equipped to do things that normal people cannot do. That's us. As Christians, in a spiritual sense, we are equipped by God to do stuff that ordinary people cannot do. How? Well, remember those viewmasters that I showed you previously on this screen? We view things differently. We see things differently than people in this world. And it causes us to live differently. It makes us stand out. It's our uniqueness. And even when it comes to unfairness, we view it differently than the world. But Peter keeps going. Not only does he tell them that they're blessed, he tells them that in the face of this, don't panic, don't worry. Isn't that what we do? If something happens to us and we think that it's unfair, what's the first thing that we do? We cry foul. That's not fair. I remember watching the Chicago Cubs play the Florida Marlins or Miami Marlins, whatever they were at the time, back when Bartman reached out and grabbed the ball. And I just remember the reaction of all of the Chicago Cubs fans. That's not fair. I remember when the Yankees were playing Baltimore back in the 90s and Jeter hit a deep ball to right field and one of the fans reached over and grabbed it. And I remember everybody crying, that's not fair. Peter tells these Christians that when something happens to you that's not fair, don't cry foul. Don't be fearful. Don't fear their intimidation. And do not be troubled. Now, it doesn't take a linguistic scholar to interpret this counsel. In fact, you don't even need to go to a commentary to understand what Peter means here. He's telling them, don't panic. Don't worry. And isn't that what we do when things don't seem fair? We've been in the middle of this pandemic for months. Doesn't seem fair. There's a lot of people that are panicked and worried. I do both of those things way too often. You know, the word fear, it comes from the original term phobos, from which we get the word phobia. The kind of fear is a fear that seizes us with terror and causes us to take flight, running from the pressure. Ever heard of arachnophobia? Let's break out the spiders. Let's see who has that. Peter says, don't do that. There's no reason to run. Don't attempt to escape the trial. Don't panic. And then he uses this word troubled. It means to be agitated or uneasy. Have you felt uneasy over these past few months? Have you felt agitated? It's the idea of feeling inner turmoil. Do you remember when Jesus said, "Let not your heart be troubled. You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many dwelling places. If it were not so, I would have told you." Remember those words? It's the same word that's used here. Don't let your heart be troubled. I can just hear Peter as he's writing. I can just watch him as he's penning these words, as he's reflecting on his life with Christ, on everything that he's gone through. And if there was ever a moment for Peter to be panicked, if there was ever a moment for Peter to be worried, it's probably now. He's probably facing more pressure, more threats on his life than at any time he lived. He's able to write to these Christians, "Don't be afraid. Don't panic. And don't be agitated. Don't be uneasy." The energy and effort with which we expend worrying, it never solves a thing. It just typically makes a situation worse. Even when trials are pressing in and people are trying to intimidate us, we can have a calmness of spirit. You want to know why? You want to know how? Well, it's because of this, what he writes next. Instead of being fearful, instead of being troubled, we sanctify Christ as Lord in our hearts. A good example of someone who did this is Stephen. He was facing death. In the face of death, he gave an eloquent and penetrating defense for the gospel of Christ. He testified concerning Jesus before the Sanhedrin. This infuriated many who heard him. And their hatred, it just raged out of control. Here was a guy, his life was on the line, and he's talking to people, and they're ready to kill him. Stephen was about to do what Peter's writing about. He was about to suffer for the sake of righteousness. Stephen, he hadn't done anything wrong. He was actually standing up for God. He was standing up for Christ. He was doing what was right. And now he's about to lose his life. But before he died, this is what he said. He gazed intently into heaven, and he saw the glory of God and Jesus standing at the right hand of God. And he said, "Behold, I see the heavens opened up, and the Son of Man standing at the right hand of God." Stephen did not deserve their savage attack. He didn't deserve rocks raining down on his head. He could have died in bitterness. He could have died cynical. "Lord, I stand up for you, and now I get pelted with rocks. Lord, I stood up and spoke up on your behalf, and there's blood pouring from my body." That's not what he said. He could have died with curses on his lips, but instead he sanctified the moment for God, asking forgiveness for his murderers. He basically did what Peter was writing about. He sanctified Christ as Lord in spite of everything he was going through. You know, it's often the difficult moments that really give us an opportunity to stand out. It's when life is tough, when it's hard, that we have the chance to show people who we really are, what we're made of. And like Stephen, no matter what we face, we need to acknowledge Christ's control over our unfair circumstances and to do our best to see that he is glorified in them. And I don't know if you're like me, but I look at what Peter was writing and who he was writing it to and everything that those Christians were going through. And I look at what Stephen did and what he faced, even trying to somehow compare my life, the pressure that I faced, to Christians in the first century, it sure seems small to me. But God knows we struggle. God knows we suffer through this life, whether it's the first century or the 21st century. And maybe what we need to do is just set apart Christ, spend more time focusing on him, focusing on Jesus. Somebody asked me if I was going to preach a sermon over the election, and I said no. I'm just going to preach a sermon over Jesus, because that's who we need. tonight if you need him, he's available. If we can help you in any way, we invite you to come as we stand.